Hey there, you're tuning in to Bike Sport Radio at killradio.org, and I hope you're having a great Wednesday afternoon. It's May 24th, 2017, and I've lost track of what show we're on. I think we're on about 135th, somewhere around there. Anyways, thanks for tuning in. You can hear us at, as I mentioned in the opening line there, you can hear us at killradio.org. You could also follow us on Facebook at the Bike Sport Radio Facebook page, where you can get a copy of our podcast and do what you want with it. So like us, follow us, and got an interesting show here. I haven't, it's been a little while since I've been able to get on the air. Technical difficulties in the studio, and then we've got just life gets in the way sometimes, you know what I mean? So yeah, I'm not making $1 million being a radio show host, so you know, it is what it is, gotta work. Anyways, been a busy week, busy couple weeks here in the bike industry, bicycle events and stuff going on here in LA and Southern California. We've had perfect weather though. We've been up in the well, I wouldn't say perfect weather, but beautiful weather. Anyways, been up in the 90s or so, so it's been fairly warm, but, you know, hey, we're troopers, we're SoCal, and that's why we pay the outrageous amounts of money and to live here, so, hey, it is what it is, right? Anyways, yeah, so this past weekend, Amgen Tour finished up here in Southern Cal, and if you were fortunate enough to get out there and check it out, you weren't disappointed. They definitely put on a show for us, and at the same time, there were a couple of other smaller events. We had Finish the Ride here in Glendale, or Griffin Park to be exact, where they put on a, you know, not a race, but they put on the rides, Finish the Rides, and a couple bike rides and a couple of running races through Griffin Park there. So that was a fun event. Simultaneously, at the same time, we had the Jewel City Ride out in Glendale, and it was interesting. Had to tune this down. We had a little helicopter flying overhead. Hey, it is LA, right? We're used to it. So, but yeah, we had Jewel City Ride, which is a very tough recreational ride. If anyone's really kind of wanting to dabble and do something a little challenging, their 40-miler is pretty tough normally. You usually get some good amount of climbing because you're in the Glendale, La Crescenta area. There's a lot of natural rolling terrain, so you end up climbing quite a bit to do some of the fun routes. This year they added on a gravel grinder, which was pretty tough and pretty rough. So it had some good elevation gains there as well. So I think we're getting close to 5,000 feet over just under 50 miles. So that's a pretty good little ratio. So anyways, let's go on to check it out. The yes, so as I was mentioning earlier, lots of events going on. We just had the Amgen Tour of California. It was a great tour. It wasn't a runaway tour as in the past, so it's been really, it was nice to actually see him racing down Angeles Forest Highway, which was really cool. So yeah, it was a very exciting race. They raced, as they said, there was going to be no champagne finish. It was straight racing into downtown Pasadena, so it was kind of cool. And if you happen to be in Pasadena this weekend, it was just a nightmare of trying to get your car around the area between the Amgen Tour closures. And then you had concerts at the Rose Bowl, and you had Museum Day, and I mean, it was just crazy day. So for you, who most people who went to see the end of the tour were on bikes, which is kind of cool. So speaking of Amgen Tour, most people already know these results. I'm not going to go too far into it, but it was definitely an interesting, awesome race. Congratulations to George Bennett. I did an awesome job pulling off that win. Time gaps, I mean, 35 seconds. I mean, come on, that's pretty damn close. Rafi, God, I can always say his Maja. I had it, I practiced it, I said I was going to say it. So, anyways, now I can't say his name. Rafa Maja, if I remember correctly. You guys can tell me, correct me later. Anyways, and then good old boy Andrew Talansky pulled off a third. So, Brent Bookwalter came in fourth for BMC. So, and Ian Boswell topped off the top five overall. So, it was really cool. And then Team Sky ended up winning the team competitions. So, a couple little controversial things going on with the Amgen Tour. It's all over Facebook, so it's no surprise. But, you know, dumping raw sewage out in Big Bear. Come on. Anyways, we'll see what happens with them. They'll probably, you know, I know those two guys that were suspended and sent home. But, you know, it could have been a legit accident. Or it could have just been, I don't know, jerks. I mean, it's hard to say, you know. They're in rental RVs and whatever. So I don't want to speculate on what happened. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is, right? Hopefully it was an accident. I'm hoping they wouldn't do that to us, but then again, you never know, so. And, of course, hometown, you know, I think the world just loves Peter Sagan for his antics. And it's nothing unknown here that he did win the sprints jersey. And King of the Mountains went to Daniel Alexander Jaramillo. Team UHC from Colombia. Hooray for the climbers. Rafa Maja also was in their top three, and Evan Huffman was second, so that's pretty good. And a rally, that team rally, and it's keep an eye on them. I think they're going to turn a couple heads this year. I think everyone's been talking about them. Came out of nowhere, wild card, and they definitely showed that, hey, that wild card was well deserving. So good for them. Congrats to everybody who survived that. Had some pretty nasty wrecks in there, but I think most of the riders finished, so that was a good sign. I think we just had a handful pull out. So yeah, definitely beautiful if you got a chance to get out there and see it. It was it's always something that you should see at least once or twice. Personally, I'm not a fan of going to the finish lines and waiting there. I'm going to go out on the road and I'm going to watch it. So it's good to see. At the same time this weekend, on Sunday, if you know, if you're racing the, you know, Tour of California, and you figure, I need a cool down ride, which somebody did, they went on down to North County, San Diego, and did the Belgium Waffle Ride. Now, Michael Marks and his dastardly mind, there's a great picture of him on Facebook if you can find it too, because let me tell you, it's a face of like when you know you're going to show up, you see this face and you just put your head down and prepare for the suffering. That's exactly the look on his face. I love Michael, but man, if I saw that face when I showed up, I'd be like, oh, I'm in for a whole bunch of hurt. And a whole bunch of hurt he dished out. Belgian Waffle Ride this year, 140 miles for the, just under 140 miles, about 130 something miles or so, was just pure brutality. According to the man himself, 800 entries and just over 400 completed, 400 and change. So what does that tell you about it? It's brutal. But you know, congratulations to everybody who participated in that. I've done the wafer. Don't mock me. I've done the wafer, and that's, for those who don't know, there's the waffle, which is the full 100 plus. Then the wafer is usually half of the distance. But I'll tell you what, that wafer, if you're not prepared, which I usually never train, but I finished the wafer, and I was like, that, if I had to go and do that again, there's just no bloody way. And the year I did it, you basically did two laps. And then they add in a couple extra climbs. So I was like, oh, heck no. So anyways, yeah, this year it was tough, but it was, well, top three here. We got the list of the top three men, and it was won by Jesse Anthony from Rally Cycling. He did it in 6 hours, 42 minutes. About 4.5 minutes back from him was Samuel Boardman. He finished in 6:46, about 4.5 minutes back. And then Sergei Vetkov from Jelly Belly finished at 6:50, 6 hours, 50 minutes. So he was seven, almost 8 minutes back exactly. That was the top three. Some really notables in there too. You had, let's see here, Philip Tinsman was in there. You had John Barrens. Let's see here, I saw, I mean, just a whole bunch of pros in here. And that's something someone noted, is that there's just more and more pros showing up. So the chances of us lowly, you know, cat guys of winning this is getting really hard. So we had, who else was there? Neil Shirley was there, Adam Mills, Brandon Baker, John Hornbeck, Christopher DeMarchi. Let's see. I mean, just this is just the names and names of who's David Banger, Ryan Steers. I mean, a lot of people, a lot of people out there. So it was a cool event and one of the very unique events. So that was the men's top three. On the women's side, there were only, sad to say, about 30 entered and 20. Okay, it looks like 30 entered and 30 finished. So, finishing ratio there is much better. but yeah, it was. Looks like you had. It was won by Larissa Connors, and she won by about 38 minutes over Amanda Nauman. And third place was followed by Laura Mowitz. Lauren, I'm sorry. Oh, she Lauren Mowitz. Fourth place was Amity Gregg, and fifth was Christy Patrick. And once again, there were some very strong women in there as well who finished it up. It's no easy, and this is for the full waffle. So we're looking at 130 plus miles, and that includes going up Double Peak. So, and anyone who's done that knows that's a climb that you stay fresh for yourself. You don't do it after doing 100 miles. So, you know, it's something that wakes you up. So, anyways, lots of other events going on. So that was this past weekend's events. Coming up here in June, we got a couple of events going on locally, some going away too. We got first weekend of June. Well, actually, just finish off the May here. May 27th weekend, Memorial Day weekend coming up this weekend. We've got the Lake Los Angeles Team Time Trial Championships, June 1st through 4th. We have the Masters Road National Championships in Georgia. And then the third GMR Time Trial in Glendora. And on the 4th, we've got the Victorville Road Race, and it's also the Junior State Road Race Championships in Victorville. And then June 9th through 10th is the Vision Relay in Moab. Moab to St. George, it's a road relay. That seems interesting. I want to check that out. June 11th, Ladero Ranch Grand Prix, Elite State Championships, Ladero Ranch Crit. And then June 18th, the Majestic Crit in San Bernardino. June 25th, the June Classic Grand Prix in Ontario. And then June 29th through July 2nd, Amateur Road National Championships in Louisville, Kentucky. So if you feel like road tripping it, there you go. That's on the road bike side. Mountain bike side, well, we've got, hey, if you've got nothing else better to do tomorrow, check it out. Thursdays, and we're actually getting ready to take a little break, but Thursdays we're gonna have the Pedal Fest series out here in Santa Clarita. Fun little event, 4 mile short, real high intense mountain bike course. It's just under 4 miles long, so you're really popping out some. This is just basically sprinting. That's all you're doing. But it's a good fun little course. Good way to get some, you know, good interval training in during the week, and maybe maybe take home a mug while you're at it and a couple pieces of swag if you're really fast. Tomorrow's race number 4 out at Central Park in Santa Clarita starts at 6. Then, let's see here. The Memorial Day weekend for mountain bike stuff is relatively mellow, but for those down south, here, starting in June, we got the Mazda Quick and Dirty MTB Race Series, which is going to start up, and that's at Lake Hodges. And then, so that would be, it looks like a Wednesday night ride, I believe. Let's see, Wednesday or Thursday. And then Kenda Cup West, the Kenda Cup coming back into, they had Los Olivos early part of May there. We've had a long stretch, kind of had a little break there. But now we jump back in with both feet. So June 3rd through 4th, you got the Kenda Cup West, Snow Summit 1, all XC, Enduro, and downhill. Then you've got two weeks later, Kenda Cup 2, at Snow Summit in Big Bear Lake, June 17th through 18th. Same thing, all three XC Enduro and downhill. And also have an endurance race as well. And then, let's see what else we got going on here. Looks like we step into July. And here's where it gets a little interesting. SPNDX Stampede Gravel Grinder in Temecula on July 8th. And then we have the Kenda Cup West Crafts and Cranks, which is the final of the Kenda Cup series. That's July 22nd through 23rd. You got XC Enduro, downhill, and endurance. So you want to take those look. You can find out more of that at on the Kenda Cup website, the Team Big Bear website as well. Alrighty, so we're going to July. And some fun events coming up. I mean, you can't knock the fun events. I've been having more fun doing fun events anyway, so to take a look at these. Let's see here. I know we've got the LA River Ride scheduled for June 4th, so if you're not racing Big Bear, you can cruise on down. They got various rides, family-friendly rides, everywhere. We got them from 15 miles to 100 miles, so, and everything in between. You got a 70, a 50, a 36, a 25, a 15, and it's a great cause. LA Bike Coalition puts this on, so that's the June 4th Sunday, 17th annual. And then let's see what else we got here. The Anti-Cancer Challenge, check that out. It's uci.convio.net. various events, and it's got a long time frame, so some sort of possibly fundraiser and challenge. Then we have the June 10th Los Angeles Tour de Cure. It's diabetes.org, Los Angeles Tour de Cure, Santa Fe Dam Recreation Center, and you've got a 12, 23, 42, 51, 66, and 100 mile options. So most of that, I believe, is going to be on the San Gabriel River Trail, so that should be kind of cool. And July kind of mellows out because it's hot. No one wants to ride when it's hot. But if you want to look up in August, August 19th, the Cool Breeze Century, you can take a look at that. That's clbike.org. Okay, so that takes that. We're into covering most of our results. So let's talk a little bit about what we're going to do today. You know, everybody thinks that, you know, oh, you work for a radio show, and oh, you work in the bike world, and oh, you do things for that, and that you can get things and whatever. Well, you know, part of that's true and part of it's not. There's a lot of times I end up buying things that I want to test. So what I'll do is I actually go and pay for it. So I get a fully unbiased opinion. No one buys my say. So, you know, I think last month I got to play with the Turn folding bike, which, you know, I wanted to buy it. That's how much I fell in love with that bike. It's just, it's amazing. And, you know, no one's all like, oh, yeah, it's a folding bike, that's why you're going to spend money on that. It's just, it was an amazing bike. It was fun fun to ride and really enjoyed it. While the turn was here, I started getting this crazy idea of creating a commuter. Now, most people's average commute to work is under 10 miles each way, usually. You know, 10, maybe 15 pushing it. And it's usually fairly flat. So, you know, now with the availability of e-bikes in our system, it's really interesting how, you know, that really kind of opened up that mileage. But e-bikes are still expensive. I mean, it's kind of like, well, I love to buy an e-bike to commute, but I still need to drop a few $1,000s on a bike that you would probably pay $300 for normally. Because most of the e-bikes, now I'm not going to badmouth e-bikes, because I really do like them, and I think they have their purpose. But anyways, I started working on a commuter project, and I said, you know what, here's my goal. I work 21.8 miles from my door. That's exactly how I've measured it out. And I think, well, you know what, I don't mind knocking out a 40-mile day split up in two. It can't be that bad. I don't think I could do it every day. I probably could if I wanted to, but, you know, once you pack down the bike with your work clothes, lunch, and whatever else you need to take, that's a lot of weight to have to carry up and down a hill. And basically, from where I work to where I live, there's a really big mountain range between it called the Santa Monica Mountains, and in particular, Sepulveda Pass. Now, I've got other passes I can get up and over. For example, I can go up Coldwater, I can go up Laurel Canyon, I can go Cahuenga, I can go through Beverly Glen, I can go up Sepulveda. So I've got all these different ways I can get over this hill. It doesn't matter. It's 1,000 feet of climbing each way. Okay, so 5 o'clock in the morning, give myself time to get to work, because I have to start my day at 8. There's no bah. Why? Well, because in real life I teach. I'm a school teacher. So I don't have that flexible schedule of coming in a half hour late and then, you know, staying a half hour late. It doesn't work that way. So it's kind of a downside to commuting by alternate means of transportation. You're relied upon by, in my case, 30 little, you know, brains that need me to be there. So it's been a tough challenge. I want to commute, but I have to make sure that I have a very reliable method of getting there. So started this project. And at first I was like, okay, I'll go look at the e-bikes first. And I looked at them and I can definitely see that, yeah, this would be great. But once again, it's a big outlay of cash. And right now no one's knocking at my door going, hey, want to try an e-bike? Let me tell you, when they do, I'm going to be like, yes, please. But anyways, in the meantime, I decided to scour Craigslist. And you know, you get lucky sometimes, but I knew what I needed. I needed something that was semi-aggressive, not completely upright, had a decent structure, decent wheel set, decent amount of gears, okay? I went with a triple. I needed something with a triple, and I wanted to make sure that I had enough gearing. Now, yeah, with a triple, I can climb anything, no matter how many gears I got in the back, so I kind of was like, okay, I can do this. So I found a Giant Escape. And I actually like the frame on it. It's a fairly long frame and the geometry fits good. A little aggressive because it's a hybrid, but it's a sport hybrid. So it's not a commuter where it's sitting straight up and you're just, you know, bike path ready and things like that. It's got a little more oomph to it. So I got this Escape. Tuned it up, tweaked it out, got it for a couple hundred bucks on Craigslist. It works really well. Threw some new tires on it, ready to go. And the process begins. How do you outfit a commuter? So I said, well, what do I need to carry? Because I am going to try to leave as much stuff at work as possible so I can just get there and change, for example, my heavy clothes. But I said, you know, I still need to carry some stuff. So what I decided to do was I said, well, let's start looking at a rack and pannier system. Something that is easy to go on and off, so I don't have to fiddle with stuff and leave it there. And something that has some decent amount of carrying, but it's well balanced. So our friends over at Topeak, and of course I had everything up in, you know, live radio, right? Our friends at Topeak said, hey, we've got this new line of bags and rack systems, and take a look at it and see what you think. So I said, sure, let's take a look. So I, you know, they send the press releases out, and I was like, check out this new line of stuff they got. And of course, one of the first things I started looking at was, I want a rack for my commuter. I said, you know, I'm usually not a fan of the rack, but I think in this case, for what I'm going to need to carry, I don't want to carry a backpack. I want to be agile enough on the bike to move around, not get too sweaty. And really, to be honest with you, the key word is agile. If, you know, something does go wrong, I want to be able to jump from the bike pretty quick. And that's kind of, really, it's LA, right? You got to be ready to move. So I decided I'm going to go with a rack system. So I started taking a look at the racks. And one of the things they set me up with here, they said, well, I'll take a look at this. And the first thing I looked at was the RX Beam rack. And I like that because, number one, the MTX Beam rack. I think I originally wanted the RX. They were out of stock. So I said, well, what do you got for, here's what I want to do. So they said, oh, you'll like this right here. So the MTX Beam rack clamps on your seat posts. Very solid structure, however. And what's really nice about these racks is that the bag systems are actually designed to interlock in a rail, lock in, snap in place. Ta-da! No more worrying about straps coming long, loose, breaking, or anything like that. So I got the Beam rack. Now, I loved it. I love how nice it was. It was awesome. Bag locked in. It was really cool. And I'll talk about the bag in a minute. So the first thing was getting this rack set up. Got the bike set up. On the rack. Boom. Ready to go. Da-da. Ah. Would you believe? Be careful when ordering the MTX racks. Any of these Beam racks. There is a limit to the size of the clamp. Okay. If you have an oversized C-post, it may not fit. So I think it's set up to go to a standard of 31. If you have anything over that, which that folding turn bike did have an over 31 inch C-tube, so I had a really hard time getting this rack on that. Actually, I didn't get the rack on that at all. I wanted to as much as I did, but I couldn't do it. It wouldn't work. So I ended up trying on something else. But in the meantime, I was like, well, you know, I'm going to go with this. So I set that rack up. Oh, my God, it's such a stable piece of machine of merchandise. All aluminum construction, super lightweight, super stiff, no rotating, no fit with weight on it. And it's fairly quiet for a rack, which is something you don't get too much of. When you have a rack on your bike, you usually hear that whenever you go. Well, because this is not attached to the frame necessarily down by the wheels, it's attached off the C-post. There's not as much noise. It seems to be quieter for some reason. Or maybe it was just me. I don't know. But I didn't notice that. But as I said, okay, that's a nice rack. I ran into one small issue with that rack, though. The bag I'm using has side bags. Has panniers that run off the side. Now, the MTX Beam rack, however, this particular one did not have the side frames. So it was like, oh, my bags would have nowhere to, when I unfolded the case, because I'll talk more about the bag in a minute, but basically the side bags had nowhere to anchor. So what I didn't know at the time, but I do know now, is that they have what's called the MTX dual side frames. So you can add the frame, the side frames, onto these Beam racks, and therefore you get the Beam rack, and then you can add on the side frames, and then you can have your panniers. So that's kind of a really cool feature. So it does, you know, you can just use the Beam rack if you're just using like a top bag. You don't need side bags. Or you can add the frame, the side frames, and then you can add the side bags. So it's kind of really cool. They also have a fender you can add in. So it's kind of a really neat line. Check them out at towpeak.com and check out the rack systems. Now, I mentioned this bag that I got. And I said, well, one other thing I have, before I go into the bag, one thing I have to also mention, and this is one of the benefits of the beam racks. The beam racks, you won't have to have a problem with clear and disc brakes. Okay, they don't attach to the stays. You can have a dual suspension bike and still have a rack. So it's kind of really cool this way. You know, with bike packing and things like that, nowadays you can actually get some of that comfort of a full suspension bike. So. And still be able to carry a rack, so it's kind of really cool. So that's something, that's one of the benefits. But if you're just doing a commuter situation like I'm doing, that's exactly what you want. You want something that's going to be a sturdy rack. So take a look at the MTB beam racks. But you can also, what I ended up doing too is I went and took a look and picked up the. Let me see, where is it? The Uni Explorer. Non-disc, okay, and that particular rack also works with the MTX line, where the bags just slide right on in, locks in place. This is a more of a traditional rack, though. It's going to mount to your seat stays, and it's going to mount down at the bottom near your near the wheel there. So, and the nice thing is they do have two versions. They have one that's disc brake ready. So it has a special adapter, so it actually clears the disc brake caliper, and then it has, you know, tie down points and whatnot for your side panniers. So I did end up getting one of these for this Giant, just because I know that I don't need to worry about suspension and things like that. It is a hardtail bike, so. Anyways, so now the bike is partially there. It's almost there, right? Ready to commute. Almost. Got the rack on there. Got the bags. Now let's talk about bags here, because the bags I'm testing so far I'm super impressed with. I needed what's called a convertible bag. I need a bag that can be a top rack bag, and at the same time be able to have some expandable capacity. So once again, looking at the Towpeak line, because I want to stay with the same system so I can lock it into the racks, I decided to take a look at their convertible systems. And the one bag that I, you know, looked at, I'm going, you know what happens if you get too big of a bag, you end up going, I'm going to overfill this thing, and I really don't want to carry that much. So I took a look around and I'm going, wow, look at the capacity. Wow, I could carry everything. I could carry everything. Remember, I've got to carry this up a hill. So how much do I really want to carry? So I took a look here and I found what's called the MTX Trunk Bag DX. D as in dog X. And what's really cool about this is that this bag expands in a couple of different ways. You can put it in its minimalist size where it's nice and compact. And then when you need more space, well, the top of it you can unzip and it expands upward, which is really cool. And at the same time, well, I still need a little extra room. You can go ahead and unzip the sides. And before you know it, you have yourself a top bag with basically side bags. Okay, so excuse me. So it's really cool. Actually, let me rephrase that. It's MTX Trunk Bag EXP, stands for expanding. And like I said, it's just an amazing bag here. Cool features in these bags. It's got a built-in water bottle holder. It's got a tail light holder. It's expandable. It's got a divider inside. It locks into the rack system and it's pretty secure. I've gone and tried to bounce it off a few times. And definitely it's not going anywhere. It does have a little safety latch so you can actually go ahead and just, whatchamacallit, you can tie it down a little better, but don't find myself doing it. I'll probably do it for security though. But yeah, I mean, it definitely, their whole line of bags. Now, in case you do some more extreme stuff with weather, rain involved and whatnot, you've also got the pen, their dry bag line as well. So take a look at that stuff. They've got quite a bit of bags in there, a lot of expandables and convertible bags. So it's kind of nice for the money, and they're not very expensive, so you can get some really nice stuff. So right now, that's where we're at. Bag of the rack is on the bike. The bike is coming along. I'm doing a couple more changes to it, and I'll let you guys know. Pictures of everything will be up so far. So a couple of other things I'm working on, and I'm in the process right now of running through the paces. We've got a phone holder. I gotta have my cell phone. I don't want to put a cell phone where I can't see it. I am commuting. I kind of want to. I don't want to use a Garmin or anything like that on this bike. I'll just put my phone on it. So I'm looking at a couple of different mounts. So we'll be talking about that next time. And anyone who knows the Escape knows that it came with a straight bar or a slightly riser bar with an upright stem, and it's got a kind of high height to begin with. I found that it was putting me too much on my tailbone, so I'm actually in the process of changing this whole front cockpit as well to make it a little more comfortable, and I will fill you in on that next time as well. Also, in the next show, I'm going to talk more about your own protection on the bike. In LA, we have the highest rate of hit and run, bike versus car accidents. And more importantly, that hit and run is really high here. So what we're trying to do is we gotta protect ourselves. And you guys have heard me so many times say this in the past. You've got to run cameras on your bikes, period, end of discussion. But it almost gets too cumbersome to attach a rear-facing camera, a front-facing camera, a camera on your helmet, blah, 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 wherever you want to put it. I don't want stuff on my head. It's mass, it's rotating weight, you hit the ground, it's extra stuff. I just don't want to do that. So nothing's going on my head. Fly 6. You guys have heard me say it before. Fly 6. Don't go anywhere without your Fly 6 or any camera on the back of your bike. Fly 6 by far is the easiest one to use. Guess what? The Fly 12 is here. So next show, we're going to talk about the Fly 6 and Fly 12. Give you guys, what I believe on the Fly 6. It's bulletproof. I have not had any issues with it. The new generation is so much more reliable. It's easier to program. It lasts longer and just works. I love it. I love how they work. We'll talk more about them and the new Fly 12, which is their integrated headlight and camera in one unit. So that will be up as well. I finally got a hold of that thing. Going to put it through its paces. We're going to test it out. Not so much the headlight. We know light lights light, but I'm looking at the camera aspect. Now, it's got a lot of great features, and we'll talk more about that in the future. So this commuter is coming along. Once everything's done, we're going to do a whole thing on all the products that we're using on the bike. I've also got to say, Elite has come through with a couple of really cool retro cages. They're really solidly built, perfect for the commuter. They look nice, and their bottles, it's an Elite bottle, come on. Their bottles are awesome, easy to clean so far, and we'll talk more about those bottles as well. Enough on the commuter. I want to get into my hot product of the week. Ta-da-da-da-da. I know. I have no transitions. I need some commercials. Who wants to buy commercials on Bike Smart Radio, huh? Huh? Somebody's gotta want to do it. Help me pay my bills. All right. Couple months ago, while cruising through Facebook, well, yeah, cruising. I was cruising through Facebook. I was bored one night, middle of the night, and this little thing pops out at me, and I'm like, "What is that?" It says, "Power Pod." I'm all like, "What's a Power Pod?" And did a little bit of research on it, started looking it up and reading about it. And the first thing you say when you look at this is, "Huh?" Literally, I said it, "Huh?" And I was like, "No, that can't work. I mean, it's a power meter, but not a power meter, but a power meter." not a power meter in what we know it as. You know, a strain meter, something on your pedal, something in your crank, something on your wheel, blah, 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 traditions, right? Well, you know, nowadays, when you really think about it, what is the power meter on your bike? It's basically a sensor reading, you know, measurement. It's a measurement tool. But one thing those things don't do is they just measure your resistance while you're on the bike and your energy output on the bike, but they don't really measure the other factors involved with putting out and establishing power. So our friends over at PowerPod have come up with a device that actually, first of all, affordable, second of all, transferable bike to bike, and is so much more than just a little power meter. The PowerPod's a small device, add-on device that you clamp to the bottom of your handlebars. Now, inside of this is probably a, I know what's inside of it, but basically it's a small computer with an accelerometer, a tilt meter, just all these different meters in here. But more importantly, it intakes your air as you're riding. And of course, Phil and everybody, I know you guys can explain it so much better, but I'm just putting it down in layman's terms here. This pod measures your air resistance, and then it calculates in with your speed sensors on your bike and your Garmin to give you a really accurate way of knowing how much power you're truly putting out with road resistance, air resistance, and every other factor, elevation, that you can imagine. It can sense everything. This is why it's going to be solidly mounted to your bike, and there's setup directions to make sure it's set up a certain way. Now, at first I'm very skeptical about it, but what's really, the first couple things that draw me to it is, number one, affordability. Not everybody has a couple grand laying around, and more than a couple grand, because if you have various bikes, you want to put a meter on all your bikes. Well, you can't do that. I mean, I can't. I can't speak for other people, I guess. But most of us really don't want to do that. We usually end up buying one, but on the bike we use most often. Then we have our other bikes that don't have them, so you're kind of like, well, what am I really doing? So this guy here, very affordable, at about $300, if I remember correctly. First thing it does, attaches to your handlebars, so you don't need to change cranks, wheels, pedals, bottom bracket, nothing like that. Two, it measures all the factors involved with your ride. Wind resistance, like I said, elevation gains and losses, your gearing, it can calculate everything out. Here's what's really cool about this. And I don't know, it's hard to say this, but basically this meter can actually measure both legs independently. So you can get what's called the power stroke feature on it, which allows you to see your balance, you know, your stroke, and wow, it was just such an amazing tool. Now that is an add-on, but it's a very affordable add-on compared to what you would pay for it on other power meters. So you're still ahead of the game. The accuracy is amazing. It's amazing. The cool thing is this will measure both legs versus one leg, and better yet, this thing goes from bike to bike. So you can put it on your cross bike, put it on your mountain bike, put it on your road bike, and you don't have to change anything really. It pretty much is a plug and play. Charge it up, do one calibration ride, follow those directions carefully, because I goofed up thinking, oh yeah, I read it right. There's some little tricks. Make sure you follow the calibration rules carefully. But once you got it calibrated, it's good to go. Plug it in, boom, plug it off, plug it in, syncs with your Garmin. It's now Ant plus bike computer compatible. and the new one now has some BLE capabilities. So it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing tool. So you can find out some more information about this if you want to follow along with me at powerpod.com. I'm sorry, powerpodsports.com. And you know, I've spoken to the founder, and I've spoken to, you know, Phil, the marketing guy. Hey, Phil, you'll hear your voice on here. I think that's your job, marketing. But, you know, this thing's been around. The parent company is called Velocomp. They've been around since 2004, and they've invented and patented this power meter that just, you know, it's all in a compact unit. And the really cool thing about it is, you know, they develop it and they just didn't stop. They've just been continuously improving. As technology gets better and better, they can actually, they're adding more features to it. And there's a whole bunch more coming down the line, which is going to be really nice. I won't tell you everything that's coming, but they're working on some things. And like I said, what's really cool is that, you know, the power pod will measure your hills, measures the forces that the hills put on your ride, the wind, the acceleration, the friction, and then it calculates everything inside. It's a small microprocessor computer in there that can take all these and converts it into, you know, logarithms there, and can come up with these numbers. So I think the thing that blew my mind was how this thing could actually, the first time I used it, I'm going to be honest, I had a hell of a time the first time. It was my issues. My calibration ride wasn't right the first time. And then my sync process wasn't right the first time. And then I finally got on the phone and talked to these guys. I said, hey, guys, okay, let's walk me through here because I'm doing something wrong. And you know what? Their customer support was amazing. They were able to sit there, talk to me, look at my file, and say, oh, you know, oh, here's what you did wrong. Okay, this makes... And we were able to go in there and correct it, fix it, redo the calibration. And now it's just push the button on, start the bike, you know, turn your Garmin on, push the button, start the Garmin, and you're good to go. And now, I mean, it's really neat to come back home, plug it into your computer, and let the software show you what you did. And it's, if you're really into data, this thing has got it for you. It's got every piece of data you could use. Now, some people will say this is too much data, okay? And some people just want to know, okay, how much power did I put out? Fine. It's got that. But here's where this tool really comes in handy. If you're always trying to find that position where you want to see that, hey, what would happen if I slide forward, or what would happen if I run these wheels, what happens if I change to this tire, this tool is so accurate that you can see what your gains are. Now, bike fitters, I highly recommend you use this. If you're into bike fitter, you know, you're a bike fitter, you're whatever, this tool allows you to see how changes in the saddle positions and whatnot can affect your power output, just like a similar power meter. Now you think, well, wait a minute. This thing requires wind, it requires blow, it requires resistance. Okay, so I can't use this on my trainer, right? That's what you think. No, it has a capability to be used on a trainer. So you're able to go ahead and use it indoors in a trainer situation. It still syncs up to your, it's basically it syncs up into your speed sensors, your cadence sensor on your bike, and your Garmin. So it uses all those tools to help calibrate things. It also uses your history. So once it's been programmed to your bike, it can sense, okay, I'm on indoor trainer mode. There's no air coming through the airport, but, you know, and that's what it is. There's a little port in the front of the PowerPod. When you go onto their website and take a look at it, you'll see what I'm talking about. That little opening right there takes a lot of information in and helps process all the knowledge. So, you know, it's a really cool setup. Now, when you get this, you basically, it comes in a small little box, and it comes with various mounts, so you can mount it on your handlebars. It uses a standard GoPro style mount, so it's got the little flanges. So if you've already got GoPro mounts on your bike, great. You know, it's ready to slide right in there, bolt it in, make sure it's snug, and you're good to go. So you attach it to your handlebars, you pair the PowerPod to your computers, to your computer and your speed sensors, and you ride. So yeah, you pretty much sync everything up, ride, and you're done. How easy is that? Plug and play, right? But yeah, if you really want to get fancy, you can go ahead and play with all the settings and whatnot. And then now you have a, well, actually I won't say that yet, but soon, like I said, keep an eye out on their website, because they have more and more stuff coming out as we progress. So, but it's a pretty easy, you know, item. You charge it up, plug it in, download data. You can get about 20 hours of riding continuously with it on. It does have an internal rechargeable battery. You recharge it using USB charger. A couple of things that did happen to me, not a big deal really. If you are on a ride and let's say you stop for lunch and you're down for a little bit of time where it's not working, where you're not, you know, using it, what you're going to do is it'll actually shut off to save its battery life. It senses that, okay, it's the auto shut off feature basically, so it doesn't drain the battery. And so all you'll need to do before you start riding again is hit the button, turn it back on, and it'll automatically resync with everything. I forgot to do that on one of my rides where I stopped, and then I got riding and realized, I looked down on my meter, I'm going, oh, my power's not showing anymore, so I wonder what's going on. And turns out I had forgotten to turn it on. So I pushed the button to try to turn it back on. Didn't work. I'm like, huh, that's weird. Why wouldn't it do it? Well, I held the button too long and put it back into calibration mode again. Like I said, it was my user error. All I had to do was push the button. And so, like I said, a couple of lessons learned there. But like I said, that's stuff that I did. Nothing they did. It's something that's already built in as a safety device, and there saves you some battery life. But otherwise, yeah, once I stopped and I just hit the button once, and boom, recalibrated up there, and off it went. Now, sometimes there's a slight delay from when you start seeing the numbers as it's, you know, calculating everything out. So in other words, you leave from your front door and, you know, make it around to the first corner there. A couple hundred feet, a couple seconds it takes to start producing your wattage. So it's not instantaneous per se in that matter when you first start, but once you get going, a couple pedal strokes in, it starts. Once you sense that movement, you start moving, it does start the calibration. So that's something that, you know, some of the other meters are a little more instantaneous, but because this one's actually processing information, it's got a slight delay, but otherwise it's dead on accurate. I mean, consistent power reads. And it's funny is that when you're looking at the data on the program, you actually can see, you can tell when you had downhill, crosswind, tailwind, headwind, and where it was in your mileage. You can see it, how it all correlates with the elevation. You can see where your power output increased and where it decreased. And it's, after, you know, you start looking at this data, it makes you start, you know, realizing, okay, here's, you know, where I back down, or here's where I push a little harder, and this is what, and it helps you go back and realize this is what it feels like to put out this much power. So it's lots of great information, lots of great data. And like I said, I mean, you can buy yourself one, you can buy yourself a power pod and still have enough money to buy a couple more if you wanted to for what you would pay for a regular, traditional strain meter, as we call it. Now, the new power pod that's out is a BLE-ANT unit, so it does sync with the phones as well. And $325. Come on. You can't beat it, right? 325 is what the rate's going. You can check it out at velocomp-llc.myshop. Basically, go to PowerPod Sports and hit the shopping link, and it'll take you right to the shopping page there. I'm not going to read out the whole email, the whole website address. But yeah, I mean, there you buy direct from them. They're also trying to get in the dealer, so you can ask your local shop about bringing them in as well. I think you should support the local business, but they will go direct as well. But yeah, that's a great price, $325, and it comes with everything you need to get going. So no special cranksets, no special bottom brackets, no wheels, nothing. No wires, wireless. Come on. You need nothing except this little guy hanging off your handlebars. Can't go wrong with that, right? I mean, it's a no-brainer. So definitely take a look at this. And I believe for the 325, which is kind of cool, I believe this has got the upgrade to the Power Stroke, which I highly recommend. Let's see. Combo Garmin Power Pod mount, Power Stroke upgrade. Oh no, okay, you have to pay for that. Sorry. So with the Power Stroke, okay, here we go. So with the Power Stroke, I read that wrong. With the Power Stroke, the Power Pod BLE and Power Meter, the newest one with Power Stroke, is $414. I will tell you what, it's worth the extra money. It's really not that much. So. They also have it where you can get a Garmin and a PowerPod together, and I believe it looks like, oh, the Garmin PowerPod combo mount, my bad, and that would be $374 for that. So that gives you a mount for your Garmin and your PowerPod right underneath it. So there's a couple of them out there on the market, but it already comes with one, so chances are you probably don't need it. They've got a couple other little things here you can upgrade to as well. So a couple of different they've got a tracker GPS upgrade key, so you can get some GPS stuff as well. I just, that Power Stroke really tripped me out. Let me tell you a little bit about this. So the Power Stroke upgrade will actually show you where you're losing wattage in your stroke, and if you really pay attention to this thing, you can adjust your stroke accordingly and actually make yourself a little more efficient. But it shows you where you're wasting wattage, which is really cool. And it puts a little animation in place so you can actually see where in your pedal stroke, what kind of pedaler you are. Now, for years, I thought I was a spinner. Okay, no, not that kind of spinner. But I was a spinner, so I thought. Well, after we reviewed some of my data from using the Power Stroke for the first time, they're like, "Well, you're a little bit of a masher." And I'm like, "What?" I thought, "No way, I'm not a masher. I'm smooth." But no, after looking through the data, we said, "Wow, check that out. I am mashing the pedal." So what that did, though, is subconsciously, the next time I went out, I concentrated more on pulling the pedals back up. And sure enough, when I went to look at the Power Stroke data, I could see that I had improved that circle. And they kind of give you this guide so you can see where the ideal stroke should be. And just little birdie mentioned that I think eventually soon you might be able to actually witness this in real time, but you didn't hear that from me yet. So anyways, but yeah, it's a good, like I said, it's a great tool. And what I ended up finding out was that was the day I tried a new pair of road shoes, and those road shoes and I were not mating very well, and I noticed it in my pedal stroke that day, because the next day I went to my traditional pair of shoes that I've run forever, and the stroke changed. So this is what I'm saying. This is how sensitive this tool is to letting you know what's really going on with your body. So I give this thing so many thumbs ups. It's not even fair. And you know, I've gotten to play with everything. I've gotten to play with a couple of the other power meters. And you know what? I love this thing. Why? Because I got three bikes and I don't have the budget to put three power meters on these bikes at $1,000+ a piece. I've got one that goes from bike to bike to bike. There's so much more I can tell you about this, but I'm going to leave you to go online to powerpodsports.com, read about it for yourself, ask questions, find them on Facebook. Phil Lucas is on Facebook there. He'll reply back to you as soon as possible. These guys know so much more about this. I can't do this thing justice, but I can just tell you this. It works. So far for reliability, it's been holding up well. I was a little worried about some of the tabs, but so far I mean, as long as you're not over cranking and yanking on them and doing stuff, it works great. And you know, I don't see any problems with this whatsoever. The longevity of the battery, that's always a concern when it comes to rechargeables. But these guys stand behind their product. They're innovators. John, who I spoke to, who helped me through all this, one of these, the founder, great guy, smart as a whip. I mean, I really had to like focus because the terminology coming out of him was up there, but then he turned around and made it so that I understood what was going on. So once again, take a look, powerpodsports.com for the PowerPod, the world's first transferable, movable power meter that won't empty out your bank account. So I'm going to continue to put it through its paces. I'll come back in a couple months and give you some more feedback on what I have found going on with it. But so far, so good. I give it definitely a thumbs up. Take a look at it, everybody. And that's it for me. So next time on Bike Sport Radio, we'll bring you back some more results from various events around the way. And we're going to visit the Fly 6, the Fly 12, some more add-ons to the commuter bike. We're going to talk about some new tires from Kenda. We're going to talk about some new shoes I'm playing with right now. We're going to talk about all kinds of great stuff. So stay tuned. Tune in next time. Take a look on our Facebook page, Bike Sport Radio Facebook page, and there is where I will keep you up to date on everything that's going on in the bike racing world. Just a big watch out when you're on the roads, guys. Be reflective, guys and gals, I should say. Be reflective, be smart, be wise. Sadly, today in the valley, we lost two cyclists that were hit by a hit-and-run driver. They were riding home from work at 1 a.m. in the morning, and sadly, one passed and one severely hurt. So, guys, keep your eyes open, ride defensively, watch your intersections, and stay safe, everybody. Also, rest in peace, Nikki Hayden. MotoGP racer, but also a very avid cyclist. Gonna miss him out there. Great guy. And that's it. This is Robert from Bike Sport Radio signing off.